I'm pulling away from the curb. We all know what that means. Other than I dropped my son off at college. It's my drive to work. So today is part two of top 20 evergreen mechanics. When we left off, I'd gotten to number 10, which was trample. But now we're up to number 9, lifelink. Okay, so the history of lifelink goes back to the set Legends, which was the third ever Magic expansion. In it, there's a card called Spirit Link. It was an aura. And then if you put it on a creature, whatever damage that creature did, you would gain life. Now, I should stress, you could also put it on your opponent's creature, and then you gained life for your opponent's creature doing damage, which sort of was an answer to your opponent's creature. If you put Spirit Link on it, then you sort of, you know, you gained all the life they dealt, so you sort of equaled out the life. We liked that ability. We called it the Spirit Link ability for a while. And we started putting it on creatures. I think, actually, now that I think about it, before Spirit Link existed, there was a card in Arabian Nights, a black card that I think basically had pseudo lifelink. Anyway, we generally liked the ability. We called it Spirit Link, tying it to the Legends card, even though now that I realize it, I think Arabian Nights actually did it first. But anyway, so what happened was, this was one of the abilities that during Future Sight, to remind you, I talked about a little bit last time, when Future Sight happened, we were making a bunch of Future Shifted cards. I kind of wanted to take more abilities and both keyword them and push them in more colors just to broaden out sort of our Evergreen suite. So in Future Sight, we managed to keyword Lifelink, Death Touch, Reach, and Shroud. We tried a few other mechanics, but those were the four we ended up doing. Shroud would later turn into Hexproof. But anyway, Lifelink, we ended up putting it in white and black. Interestingly, the first two colors that actually did it. White because white is king of life gain. And then black because it kind of feels like you're draining somebody. It felt similar to sort of like a life drain effect that black does. So, and we were talking about calling it Spirit Link, but the problem was we liked putting it on things like vampires in black, and Spirit Link just didn't sound right. So we decided to do Lifelink just to make it a little more direct. This is a good example. Sometimes when we name things, sometimes we use direct words, and then sometimes we sort of make compound words out of it. Lifelink's a good example where Lifelink isn't specifically an actual word, but life's a word and link's a word. You put them together. It does a good job of sort of getting an essence of what you're doing. The reason we like Lifelink, the reason it's a valuable tool, why I said number 9, is usually creature keywords do one of two things normally. Either they help with evasion, they help get your creature in on attack and help them get through attack, or they help protect the creature. They help keep the creature from dying. Those are the two most common uses. There are some, like First Strike, maybe that, well, it's a little bit evasive because you don't want to block First Strikers if you can't kill them. It just helps them fight better. Lifelink is interesting, and Lifelink does something a little bit different. So one of the big things when you're talking about creature combat is a concept known as the clock. The idea of the clock is, let's say I have damaged my opponent can't block. I have a flyer. I have a 3-3 flyer. My opponent's at 12 life. Well, he's got a clock of 4 turns, which means unless he interacts with my 3-3 flyer, getting a blocker, destroying it, doing something, if I hit him every turn for 3, in 4 turns, he'll be dead. That's the clock. And so one of the things as you get in more advanced play is understanding your clock is very important. Knowing sort of like, there's a lot of what we call racing, where I'm trying to beat you before you're trying to beat me. And a lot of that is making sure that your clock is different than your opponent's. Your clock is slower than your opponent's clock, or faster, depending on how you want to think of it. The idea that you're going to beat them before they're going to beat you. And life gain really does a good job of messing with the clock. That a life gain creature, a life link creature, really changes a lot of calculations. And so, and the other thing that's nice is you can grant lifelink as an ability, which means that it's sort of a temporary life gain, but tied to combat. It also is an attack trigger, so it occurs. It's not an attack trigger. It's combat damage. But there's a lot of reasons to want to attack with a lifelinker. Sometimes you sit back. Lifelinkers can, if you're not careful, lifelinkers can get into a defensive state. So you have to make sure we don't make a lot of like 2-5 lifelinkers. Got to be careful with things that are a little bit too aggressive on the defensive side. But It is just a useful ability, and it combines in ways that are just have a nice dynamic to them. Okay, number 8, I talked about protecting your creature, is Ward. So Hexproof, which I talked about last time, it's a little bit hard to interact with. It really just shuts off all your spells. We were looking for something that had a similar feel. It protected your creatures, but it was something that you could interact with a little bit more. Ward was kind of non-interactive. And so the idea, we tried a bunch of things looking for replacements for Ward. Not for Ward. Looking for replacements for Hexproof. And we tried this thing that ended up being what we called Ward eventually. Was this idea of, well, I'm harder to target. If you want to target me, it costs more. Not that you can't do it. Not that there aren't answers, but the answers, you know, maybe it takes you a few more turns before you can do it, or if you do it, maybe you can't do something else that turn. And once we realized we wanted to sort of make a keyword out of Ward, we then decided to broaden out a little bit. Usually when we'd written down a card, it had been done with mana. But once we realized it existed, we started looking for other costs. The cleanest one was, mana, but not every color really made sense doing a lot of mana ward. So for black and red, we came up with the idea of life ward, which is kind of cool. Life's a resource you have. If you want to target me, it's going to cost you life. That felt good. We've done a lot of experimenting since then, trying to find other ways, you know, what are other ward effects. We've had some fun experimenting. Clearly, your opponent paying a cost, that's easy. There's some stuff where the ward is, like, there's an action that has to be taken. We've definitely had some fun experimenting, and we'll continue to experiment. It's definitely an area that is neat. Something we get asked a lot for that's a little trickier is the idea, like, my ward is you giving me life. That's a little bit harder, because that's not, you giving me life is not a cost. Anyway, so it gets trickier. But ward is very effective, and one of the better protective things. If anything, one of the complaints we're getting right now is we're being a little too aggressive, meaning we're using ward too much. So I think we like ward because one of the things we want to do is you want to make sure you have creatures that have some presence on the board, and making them a little bit harder to kill in construction especially helps with that. Okay, number 7, Death Touch. So this, along with Lifelink and Reach and Shroud, was one of the things introduced in Future Sight. So Death Touch started... There was a card in Alpha called Thicket Basilisk and a second one called Cockatrice. And here's my little personal story about it. When I first got into Magic, I bought cards at a convention. I bought some Alpha. Not tons, though. So when Beta came out, I bought 2 boxes of boosters and 2 boxes of starters just because I wanted to be able to access Magic. I knew if I wanted to play with friends that I would need to provide the product because it was hard to find Magic. But anyway, one of my treats is I allowed myself to open 1 booster pack a day. In one day, I opened my booster pack, and I saw Thicket Basilisk for the first time. And I was blown away. There's this moment when you first play Magic where you see this card where you can't believe Wizards made that card. Thicket Basilisk for me. It kills anything? Anything? So Thicket Basilisk, by the way, said, if you are blocked by a non-wall, destroy that card. It was based on blocking. And eventually, one of the reasons we keyworded this, Death Touch, was... We liked the ability. We called it the Basilisk ability before it got a name. But we tended to sort of change it up. Some of them were like, if I'm blocked. Some of them were, if I do damage. Eventually, we tied it to combat damage because we just liked the flavor better. Like, oh, I attack you. But if you, like, you know, shrink my creature or somehow prevent the damage, oh, you know, it has to do damage to you to kill you. That its touch is deadly, but it has to touch you. And then Death Touch, you know, we thought that name did a good job of sort of communicating the idea that I'm so deadly that I merely have to touch you and I kill you. Death Touch has proved to be a pretty valuable tool, especially in green. It shows up in green and black. On small creatures, it's a nice answer to larger creatures, especially in Limit. We like making the 1/1 Death Touch creature. It's something that can protect you, and also it has some evasion in that. People don't really want to block the Death Touch creatures they can help, especially if the things they're losing are worse than what you're trading. But usually Death Touch creatures being smaller, you can answer them. We do put Death Touch a little bit on bigger creatures some of the time, more on black than green. In black, we like the idea that the thing's really dangerous and that if you have to double block it because it's big enough that you have to double block to kill it, then with Death Touch it kills everything that blocks it, assuming that it does enough damage to each of the creatures. It has to do one damage to each creature. Anyway, it is just very useful. It's something that it's sort of creature answers, but in combat, it allows smaller things to answer bigger things. So anyway, it just does a lot of good work. Okay, number six is Vigilance. So Vigilance showed up in Alpha on the card Sarah Angel. For the long time, we called it the Sarah ability. And we put it a lot on... Mostly it showed up in white originally. Then in Champions of Kamigawa, we introduced it as a keyword. The one that challenges with Vigilance was... when you name abilities, there are sort of three levels of abilities you could name. Number one is, it's just an intuitive name. You read that name and you know what it does. Flying is the perfect example of that. Like, you know, I don't have to do a lot of explaining what flying does because the word flying conveys what it is. Number two is something like Death Touch, where you kind of can piece it together. Where it's not a word that you know. We made up a word. It's a compound word we made up. But it does a lot to help you. It does a lot to imply things. The third level is, look, the word in a vacuum is never getting you there. And one of the problems we had is there's no word we could come up with that sounded like, oh, not tap to attack. Because not tap to attack is not like a real world thing. It's like a game action. So anyway, this third category is, well, it makes some, once you know what it is, it makes enough sense that you can sort of use the word to help remind you what it does. The fourth category, the category we don't use, is the word just doesn't tell you anything. And even when you know what it does, it doesn't help you. We try to avoid those. But Vigilance is definitely more of a vocabulary word in that you're not going to know what Vigilance does. I once did a podcast where I asked my daughter Evergreen keyboard names for her to guess what they did. Just to sort of demonstrate this phenomenon. But anyway, it was a fun, if you haven't heard it, a fun podcast. Okay, Vigilance, by the way, is useful in that it allows you to be offensive and defensive. We normally tend to put it on things that have a little bit of a higher toughness. Sometimes we put it on low power creatures, like a 2/5 is kind of fun to Vigilance, but sometimes, especially in green, we put it on just bigger creatures to allow you to be aggressive but still have a defensive game. Okay, number five, Flash. So Flash first showed up, I think, in Alliances, I think? The idea of a creature that you could cast whenever. Normally, when Richard made Alpha, you know, there's sorceries and instants. Instants are nice because it's something you can do outside of the main phase. You can do it in combat. You can do it on your opponent's turn. And the idea of creatures that sort of function that way... I think the earliest ones might have made a token. Like, we had instants that made tokens, and then we started realizing that we have creatures that you could cast like it was an instant. The reason we did it at first blush was for surprise, right? Oh, I can attack. I've done the math. I can attack. Ha-ha! You didn't expect I had a creature that you didn't know I had. So it allows some sort of surprise, playing to hidden information, which we like. We then learned... There's sometimes where instance lets us do things we don't normally do. Probably the classic example would be Enter the Battlefield effects. Let's say I wanted to Enter the Battlefield effect that it basically is an instant. Counter target spell. Well, that's on a normal creature. It just doesn't make any sense. I can't put, when this enters counter target spell as a sorcery, as a normal creature spell, because it would never work. But with Flash on it, it allows us to make that. So Flash is primary in white... and then secondary in green, blue, and black. It's primary in blue and green, and secondary in black and white. And even red has access to it. If red has an effect it really needs, it doesn't do it a lot. But like if there's an Enter the Battlefield effect in red that we really want to be an instant, we can put Flash on it. We had it since pretty early on in Magic. We keyworded it in Time Spiral Block. There was a time theme, and we had talked about keywording it. It just seemed like the perfect opportunity to keyword it. And so for the first time ever, for those that longtime listeners know that if I could go back and redo the game, I would make instant a super type and not a card type. Instead of having Flash, I would have sorcery. Instance would be instant sorcery. Flash creatures would be instant creature. We're sort of past the window to do that, but it's what I would do. Flash is definitely a useful tool. It allows us to make things, not just creatures. We can put Flash on any permanent. The only permanent we don't put Flash on is lands. Only because it's counterintuitive. The rules say when you can play a land, and you can't play a land on your opponent's turn. So putting Flash on a land implies things that aren't true. And there's really no reason to play lands at instant speed. So all non-land permanents have the ability to have Flash on them. And a lot of times the nice thing about it is when there's something about it that kind of acts like a spell in some ways, where there's a moment of suspense or surprise. The important thing to having Flash on it is it has to matter when, you know, if you play it in instant speed, essentially, not that that's the thing, but if you play it as if you play it instant, we want some sort of gameplay where you don't know it's coming, and that matters that you do that. But it's a very valuable tool. We use it quite a bit. Flash is definitely an important tool in our arsenal. Okay, number four is Scry and Surveil. I put them together. Scry first showed up in Fifth Dawn, designed by Aaron Forsyth. I think he was trying to make something that was a little bit more of a mechanic for the more serious player. It's not that any player can't play Scry. It's just the utility of Scry is something that takes a while to understand how good it is. One of the biggest issues in Magic for competitive play is you have a randomized deck. There's a lot of variance in the game. But one of the things that is nice is Scry helps reduce variance in a way that is subtle but effective. And so Scry first showed up in Fifth Dawn. Then Eric Lauer brought it to a core set. And then Eric Lauer kept putting in sets. He put in Theros and other sets. And eventually we realized it was just such a valuable tool, we made it evergreen. The nice thing about Scry is, A, it fixes your mana, which is a good thing. It helps make games get smoother. It helps in sets where you have any sort of synergy, you know, high synergy or combinatorics that you're trying to make happen. The flavor is really good. Scry means to look into the future, if those don't know what Scry means. So it just did a lot of, it played well. And not only did it play well, it just made the games play better. And it's a small effect, so something you can do incrementally. We like to have effects that you can do, whenever such and such happens. We like triggered effects. And there's some triggered effects that you just can't do big things on. And so it's nice to have a few small effects. And Scry 1 is nice. It's very bite-sized in that way. I will note, by the way, that Scry 1 is pretty easy. As you add numbers to Scry, it gets complicated pretty fast. So we don't do a lot of Scry 2, and we do things above Scry 2 more infrequently. Blue is primary in Scry, white secondary. Black, green, and red all get Scry. All colors get Scry. Red gets the least of the larger Scry numbers, I think. You mostly do Scry 1. Green and black can get Scry 2, although we don't do a lot of Scry 2 in green and black. And then blue really is the only one we tend to do, like Scry 3. We've been trying to do a little bit more higher number Scrys in white, but we'll see how that goes. Then Surveil got made, I think, in Guilds of Ravnica. There's no greater fan of Scry than Eric Lauer, so he made a Scry variant called Surveil. Surveil's exactly Scry, except cards go to the graveyard rather than to bottom library. The way Scry works, I didn't describe. Scry means, for those that somehow don't know this, it's an evergreen mechanic. You look at the top N cards of your library, whatever the number is, and you can put those cards on top of your library or bottom of your library in whatever order you wish. So if the Scry is larger than one, Scry 2 or whatever, one card can go back to the top, one can go to the bottom. Surveil is the same, except instead of going to the bottom of your library, it goes to the graveyard. It's just much more synergistic with sets that have a graveyard theme. We've since made both evergreen. The rule of thumb is all sets, or most sets, have either Scry or Surveil. We try not to put both in the same set, just because they're similar but slightly different. I will say, as one of the word people, it does bug me to no end that we didn't take one word. Like, I would much rather, Scry to library, Scry to graveyard, something in which you have one word connective tissue that, so you don't have to learn two different vocabulary words for basically the same thing. But other than that, super useful. It's incremental. You can put it on spells. You can put it on effects. It is a what we call a keyword mechanic. So it goes in lots of different places. It could be trigger ability or whatever. You can do all sorts of things with it. It is super, super valuable. Okay, number three is Menace. So Menace shows up for the first time in a card called Goblin War Drums in Fallen Empires. It was just an aura. That's a good question. When did we make Menace? I looked a lot of these up. I did not look Menace up. Menace was after Future Sight. Basically what happened was early in Magic we had Landwalk, and then we had Fear, and then Fear became Intimidate. The problem with all those mechanics were there wasn't a lot of gameplay for your opponent. If I play Forest Walk and you have a Forest, what can you do? You can't stop me. If I have a creature with Fear and you don't have a black creature or an artifact creature, you can't stop me. That there wasn't a lot of answers to them. And that what we wanted is, we like that the evasion has answers. We like that there's something my opponent can do about it. And Menace is really nice in that it's a cost. It's a real cost. And sometimes I can look at the board, you have one creature, I have Menace, I know you can't block me. Or maybe you have two creatures, but my Menace creature is bigger than your two. Like, it allows for an interesting dynamic where it changes up how combat works, but in a way that matters, that your opponent can interact with. And Menace has proven to be like a really effective, cool keyword. It's primary in black, secondary in red. We've used it a little bit, I think, in green, I think. But anyway, we like evasive mechanics, and this is, I mean, we'll get to number one. Number one is also evasive mechanic. But number three, Menace, is a really interesting dynamic, like one of the most dynamic of the evasive abilities. And I really like the interplay of it. The flavor's really good. I'm so scary that you one creature is afraid to block me alone. You know, that's pretty cool. So it's got a lot going for it, and it is just, it is super, super useful. Okay, which brings us to the number two, Haste. So Haste means you can attack the turn you cast it. Doesn't have summoning sickness. I put in quotes because that's not an official game term, but we use it all the time. So Haste first shows up in Alpha on a card called Nether Shadow, which is a creature, a black creature that could pop out of the graveyard, and then you can attack right away. Early on, Haste like ability showed up in black on things that popped out of the graveyard. We eventually started doing it in red. And then in 6th edition, I believe Haste is the first evergreen keyword that wasn't in Alpha that we keyworded. Like, one of the things that happened early on is there were a lot of abilities existed. Some in Alpha, some showed up in other places. But like, oh, this is a pretty useful thing. And then we started using it a lot. And there was just, for a while, there's a list of mechanics that we use mostly every set, but we didn't name them. And we really, part of the push is saying, you know what, we really just, it's easy, it's, you don't want too much vocabulary, but you want a little bit of vocabulary. And just, when you name something, it allows people to talk about it, it saves you a little bit of word space, although there's reminder text. But on higher rarities where you don't have space for reminder text, you can drop it. It just allows us to do things. And even with reminder text, once people learn, the evergreen keywords are nice because once you learn them, you understand what they are. There's a high barrier to becoming an evergreen mechanic. You really have to be something that there's just such utility we want to use you almost every set. And Haste is a great example of that. It changes what we call, I talked about the clock earlier. It changes the clock. You know, if you don't anticipate I have a haste creature, I'm doing damage at a time that you didn't expect that. Also, sometimes if I attack and I go, well, you can't attack me next turn, or I'm not worried next turn, haste creatures can be a surprise. I know for constructed play that haste is a really valuable tool. You want your creatures to have impact. One of the things about constructed is, in order for a creature to be worth it, it not doing anything for the first turn it's in play, that's a big barrier. So haste is nice in that it immediately does damage and it presents something right away. Haste is primary red, secondary green, and black. We've done it a little bit in blue on things that are mostly tap abilities. We messed with that in Future Sight. We haven't done too much of that, but... So the other fun thing was... So it didn't have a name. For a while, we in R&D called it Celerity, which is a fancy word for fast that comes, I think, from Vampire the Eternal Struggle. Eventually, when we named it in 6th edition, we were looking for synonyms for Speed. Speed had some issues because sometimes you talk about games, the speed of the game and stuff. And so we ended up calling it Haste, which is a synonym. Haste is super valuable. It is. We use it a lot. In fact, it's one of those mechanics after flying, which I'll get to in a second. We use Haste quite a bit. Haste and Flash are both super useful and go to a lot of different places. And like I said, it is a nice, easy, impactful thing. You know why you get excited when you see it for the first time. And it leads to a nice interplay in the games. Okay, which leads us to our number one category, or number one in the category of top 20, which is flying. If I had done top 20 mechanics of all time, and I didn't exclude Evergreen, there's a good chance flying would have been number one. Flying is just so, I mean, there are not a lot of mechanics that have been in every set we've ever made. I don't think Trample's been in every set, but I think that for a while we were leaving Trample out of core sets because we thought it was a little confusing. First Strike might have shown up. First Strike's the other one that might have shown up in every set, but there's not a lot of mechanics. Flying is one of those. Although, there was a set, Fallen Empires, the East Coast playtesters who made Fallen Empires, Scaffolize, Jim Lim, Dave Petty, Chris Page, they were not big fans of flying. So I believe there's one activated flyer and one enchantment that grants flying but kills the creature that it gives it to it in Fallen Empires. And that's it for flying. Ice Age also was kind of famously did not have a lot of flyers. It was also low in creatures in general, but there's not a lot of evasion in Ice Age. And so if you ever played Ice Age Sealed, which was not recommended, a lot of winning was knowing how valuable your evasive creatures were. Anyway, flying is a tricky mechanic in that you kind of have to commit to flying. You can't just do flying a little bit. If you're going to do flying, you really got to do flying. And the reason flying is so valuable is one of the things is you want people to play creatures. Creatures are really fun. But at some point, you can get to a board stall where it's just not advantageous for either side to attack. And you need to make sure the game ends. I talked about inertia in my top 20 podcast, that it's important that the game designer makes decisions such that the game will end. That's why evasion is so important as an evergreen keyword. That's why a lot of the keywords that are evergreen are about helping you make damage happen, helping you make the game end. And flying is really, really good at that. The neat thing about flying is it sort of takes all the complicated board and narrows it down to a smaller thing to evaluate. Sometimes only one person has a flyer. Sometimes multiple people have a flyer. But usually, less often you get stalemates in the air. It happens, but it happens a little less often. And it also sort of gives you some pinpoint for your removal. It's like, oh, they have a big flyer. Well, if I remove their big flyer, then my medium-sized flyer can get through. And once again, the clock's in my favor. Flying is interesting, and that's the only mechanic that was so foundational on how we have to build around it that we made a whole other mechanic, Reach, I talked about last time. Like, Reach's only existence is to deal with flying. That's how potent flying is. That there's a whole another mechanic that's just like, I just deal with flying because flying's important. But anyway, flying... Oh, the other thing about flying, I mentioned this a little bit, but just to reinforce this, is flying is the most intuitive mechanic we have. The amazing thing about flying is when I'm teaching a beginner and I say flying, it's almost as if I explain the rules to flying and the person is just like, well, of course, that's what flying is. You know, flying is... Like, if I said to somebody, what do you think flying does? And I've done this experiment. People just guess. It is just so... You're like, I have a creature that doesn't fly. You have a creature that flies. Can my creature that doesn't fly block your flying creature? And they go, no. No, it cannot. And so that's another thing about flying is that it's flavorful to the point of, like, one of the things you look for in names and is that when you're... Flavor can define your mechanic in a way that the player knows what it does and that can figure out what it does. That's super powerful. That it's much, much easier to teach something that is already intuitively known, if you will. So flying is one of the absolute easiest things to teach people. And it's one of the reasons, like whenever we've made beginner games, whenever we did Portal or Starter or all the things, we did a lot of things where or even the Arc system, a lot of things where we did a simpler version of Magic. We often would remove most keywords, but we never removed flying. Flying was so easy and so important that every version always had flying. Flying was just a thing we did. because of how important it was for the gameplay and how easy it is to understand. But anyway, for all those reasons, that is why that was number one. So let's just to relive the list one more time before we wrap up for today. 20 was Hexproof, 19 First Strike, 18 Defender, 17 Reach, 16 Mil, 15 Indestructible, 14 Fight, 13 Equip, 12 Crew, 11 Double Strike, 10 Trample, 9 Lifelink, 8 Ward, 7 Death Touch, 6 Vigilance, 5 Flash, 4 Scry or Surveil, 3 Menace, 2 Haste, and 1 Flying. Those are, in my order, at least as of today, my ranking of the top 20 Evergreen mechanics. So I hope this two-part series was interesting to you. Maybe if you guys like this, I've done some top, usually I do top 10, not top 20, but maybe I'll do some more top something lists in the future. Anyway, guys, I'm now at work, so we all know what that means. It means the end of my drive to work. Instead of talking to magic, it's time for me to be making magic. I'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.